Boom, coming in hot, Chichi. How we doing, brother?
Yeah, you're on a remote right now. Case is moving around the country as he normally is. Dude, I'm just really proud of yesterday's show. Thank you for getting Bronson Arroyo. He is very cool, and I was very proud. I will toot my horn a little bit going over this whole freaking remote stuff. I thought he sounded really cool on the guitar, if you heard it.
Dude, he sounded great, and kudos to you and him for getting on about 10 minutes early and kind of putting the whole Zoom, you know, what you have to do.
Like, great point. Hey, Bronson Arroyo was so psyched to join Sean Casey on the show, folks. He was on, like, 15, 20 minutes before. We did, like, a whole sound check. I felt really cool. I felt like I was, like, in a music world or something. But, dude, he is so awesome.
Did you record that? Because we should use that.
You know what's funny? He was, like, kind of, like, he was messing around. He's tuning his guitar, and he started just, like, messing around. And I hit the record, but you know, when I hit the record, it goes, recording in progress. And he was playing, and he just went, and I was like, oh, yeah, don't worry, I'm not going to play that. So, we'll see. Maybe we'll sneak that in there. We'll sneak that into an Instagram clip or something like that, because he's a freaking sick guitarist, dude.
Bro, he is legit. I mean, that was so cool to have him play with us, you know, on our podcast. Have Bronson play a couple songs, but dude, he's legit. I love what he was saying, too. I don't know if he said it on air, but he was talking about maybe at some point Ed Vedder's gonna play in Boston, maybe at some point here, you know, this year, and then Bronson and the 04 would open up for him.
How
in Boston.
Sick will that be? Yeah, it's the venue that they're just opening up, or they just opened up. What do you say? Who's a piano player who's really good? What's his name?
Josh Klinghoffer is gonna be there.
No, but who's it? Wait, he said they launched this new venue with who's a piano player? He's really good. He's amazing.
Billy
He's married
Joel?
To the
Billy Joel?
He's good too. He's married to the celebrity girl.
Usher.
No.
John Legend.
John Legend. I almost said John Mayer. They look different. Anyway. Wait, hold on. Wait, what were you just saying before that? That just popped a thought into my head. Dude.
Josh Klinghoffer.
Wait, hold on. Before we get into all this, we have great, amazing baseball stuff to talk about. WBC is as good as it's ever been. However, before you say that, you mentioned Billy Joel. Dude, Billy Joel and Stevie Nicks playing together.
I want to be there for a while.
Started last week. I was actually listening to Bill Burr's concert podcast. He went and saw them at that LA venue last weekend and said it was unbelievable.
Incredible.
They both play like an hour and a half to 2 hours each. So it's a dual thing. It's not like
do they play together?
They did two or three songs together. I'm not even going to say what they were because it was like,
bro,
really cool, you know, dude. A lot of Tom Petty. They played, they covered Tom Petty together.
Oh, yeah. Stop dragging my heart around. Because that's Stevie
I think
Nicks
that's what
right
they, that's it.
Petty. Well, that's Petty's song.
Right.
But he gave it to Stevie Nicks and it went number one.
Exactly. Like, so Stevie plays it and Billy accompanies her on it.
Oh, bro, that's awesome. That's
and I
awesome.
Guess apparently she does a tribute to, she does a lot of tributes to Petty within her set.
That's
we got to cool, see man. It.
That's cool. Yeah, we got to see that, dude. I mean, I'm sure they're going to come to the Garden. So maybe we can make that happen.
Oh, let's do that. You have money. You got the tickets. I can't afford those tickets. Jess said to me the other day, she's like, you know, Madonna's playing the Garden. In a couple months,
dude. First off, what did Madonna do to Madonna?
That's a good question. Great question. I don't understand why people do that. I don't. I guess it becomes like an obsession to change the way you look. But I kind of like.
She's going down the Michael Jackson route, kind of.
She certainly is. Yes, she is. But like, do you want to see Michael? Or do you want to see Madonna before we all?
Yeah, probably.
Kick the bucket.
I don't know. Not really. Not really. Not really.
No.
I like the 80s Madonna, 90s Madonna.
Yeah,
But
maybe she's going to sing all those songs. She's going to look like Michael Jackson. Like
Borderline.
That's a great one.
Those are the ones I want.
Hold on. Let's do this. Bucket list before it's all said and done. Concerts you haven't seen yet. Artists you haven't seen yet.
I want to see The Who. I want to see the Allman Brothers.
You've never seen the Allman Brothers?
No. But I want to see the Doobie Brothers, too. And they're coming soon. They're going on tour this summer. I'm going to go Michael McDonald. Although those guys, I love the Doobie Brothers.
I got one for you.
Their bucket list.
I got one for you. Hold on.
John Mellencamp's a bucket list for me, dude.
I like that.
And I don't know if he's touring anymore. I mean, you know, he was playing like some small theaters a few years ago, and I was fired up. I was like, I got to go see Mellencamp, and I never did. Mm. You know what was cool, dude? He's from Indiana. Mm. And I put on, one of the Reds things back in the day, and a lot of Reds fans in Indiana, I had put down that I was a big Mellencamp fan. Well, his people called me.
What?
And they wanted to know if I would come out on stage with Mellencamp, but it was like during the summer.
What are you talking about? What do you mean I couldn't do it? That's like when you said the other day, when you're like, baseball. I can't play Augusta. Of course you can play Augusta, and of course you can go on stage with John Mellencamp, Sean.
Dude,
this is why you needed me back then when you were...
Change. I was playing baseball.
That's
fine. I couldn't
just
leave the Reds and be like, hey, guys, I've got to go on tour. I got to go out on stage with Mellencamp right now so he can sing. You're so good. Come on, baby.
I'm missing a Pirates game tonight. I got to go see Mellencamp. Yeah,
I'm not hitting third. I'm hitting third for Mellencamp, but not the Reds are paying me $8 million a year.
That's like, dude, you remember when Nomar and the Red Sox were fighting with each other and he just said F it one night and went to a Celtics game and didn't play and didn't show up?
What?
You don't remember that? That was big deal, dude.
Come on, Nomar. That's not okay. That's tired. That's so tired.
We're trying to get him and his wife on too, so we should be nice. I didn't mean that.
Well, yeah, no, we love him and his wife. They are the best, both.
Yeah. Oh, dude, I got a great one.
Really quick before we get going, baseball. This is kind of baseball. Stevie Nicks, dude. Whenever I listen to Stevie Nicks, I think of Aaron Boone, which is incredible. Really? My first big league camp with the Reds. Boone and I lived together on Siesta Key out there in Sarasota. Oof. And every morning we wake up at 6:30, get in his car. And we listen to Stevie Nicks' greatest hits.
Really?
And you know, it's just how songs bring you back to a time.
Oh, they're great. Great.
I just texted the other day. I was listening to Stevie Nicks' greatest hits, and I sent Boone a video. I go, bro, I don't know. What is it about when I listen to Stevie Nicks? I'm thinking Aaron Boone. I don't know if that's okay. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You ever watch? It's good. You never watch American Horror Story. You're too much of a wimp for scary stuff like that.
No.
Stevie Nicks was on one. There was. It's great. It's a great show. There was a. There was a season that was all about witches, and Stevie Nicks played herself as a witch. You know, there's rumors that she's an actual witch.
Yeah,
I say that in the nicest possible way. Like sometimes witches are cool, not like with a B in front of it.
She's cool. She's whatever she does is cool.
She's the coolest ever. One last music thing before we move on to baseball: Lionel Richie and Earth, Wind & Fire playing on Long Island, 15 minutes from my house this summer.
Bro, I love both of them.
Amazing.
And I love me some Lionel Richie when he plays
everything.
Oh, what a feeling when you're dancing on the ceiling.
Everything he sings is great. Plus, when I was a little kid, his last name was Richie. Everybody called me Richie. And so, like, he's probably one of my favorite artists of all time. Oh God, I even watched, what was the show? Nicole Richie, his daughter, did with Paris Hilton.
Paris Hilton. Dude, I just saw Paris Hilton today on the Today Show. It's so funny you said that. I haven't heard of Paris Hilton or thought about her probably since that show. And today she was on the Today Show. She's like 42, has a kid, whatever. I don't
She's
like,
a DJ. Whatever. She's one of the best. Yeah. She's one of the most popular DJs in the LA DJ scene.
Good for her, man. Good for Paris Hilton.
Good for you, Paris. All right. Let's talk about, I love how people must come on this show, like to listen to our show to think, oh, let's see what Sean Casey says about baseball. We talk about Paris Hilton for a half hour.
Exactly.
Dude, so much going on. Puerto Rico threw a perfect game in a WBC today. However, I believe it was a, what do you call that, mercy rule? It's funny that there's a mercy rule.
Eight innings, they got 24 outs. But, dude, I don't care who you're facing, who you're going against. You 24 up, 24 down is a good thing, especially in Puerto Rico, how much passion they have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for that team. So that's pretty cool. That was pretty cool, man.
It was very cool.
And you know, one thing that's been cool about these about the WBC this year, Chance, don't you feel like it's been amped up?
Yes.
Like these crowds.
I don't know.
These crowds are as into as I've ever seen, ever.
Oh, yeah. Somebody hit a homer. Shoot. I just saw the piece of video and it was like, I don't even remember which teams were playing, but this dude hit a home run and the crowd was already doing like some sort of chant. Oh, my God. It must be so amazing. Mike Trout hit a homer. I saw he was talking to J.P. Morosi after the game, and he's just like, he said, this is the most enjoyable time I've ever had playing baseball. That's Mike Trout, everybody. Yeah. This is the most enjoyable time I've ever had playing the game of baseball. I really am proud of whoever, like, it's a win. The WBC is a win. I don't think you can argue that anymore.
It's a win, dude. And if you're Mike Trout too, you're fired up that you came out the gates and your team put a 9 spot on the Canadians in inning one. How about in the first inning? Have a first inning. Trout walked, came back, and hit a 3-run bomb in the first.
Cool. Unbelievable.
They went up 9-0, dude. Never looked back. Lance Lynn settled in. You know D-Row was fired up. Now they're 2-1. They're going to be moving on. But they needed that statement game because, you know, talk about the crowd. Mexico, you know, a few games ago when they beat the U.S., dude, in Arizona, when Mexico started, you know, taking the lead there, that crowd was a ton Mexican, dude. They were going crazy out there in Arizona. I just thought that was cool, too. There was a lot of USA, a lot of Mexico chants, and, you know, but for the U.S. to lose to Mexico, Trout was saying, hey, we got together. It was a wake-up call for us to, you know, to make sure that we were ready to go and that we were going to come out and go after somebody.
I love
it. And boy, did they ever, dude. They came out hard.
Yeah, very cool. I mean, obviously we're pulling for Team USA. Obviously we're pulling for D-Row and all these guys on a team. But I also like there's characters. You get more characters in this game. There was I forgot who the pitcher was. I don't even remember his name. Never heard of him before. But this guy was pitching today, and he had like this quadruple leg kick thing, paws, like semi-Johnny Cueto thing, and he did it every time he pitched. And I'm like, this is really cool to see a guy who that's how he pitches. That's how he pitches the baseball. That's how he learned how to pitch it. That's how he does it. Might not play in America, but it plays there. And then the second part, I love the storylines of, like, you're starting to see, like, I'll go to team. First of all, Team Italy is getting after it big time. Props to Mike Piazza, because they're winning games. And that program, think about it, Italy, like, 10 years ago, baseball, they love baseball there, but they were not good at it. And Mike Piazza did a lot for that country of getting camps and getting schools, and they are winning games. They are moving on. And one guy on a team, Matt Harvey, I read an article today. Matt Harvey might be pitching himself into a starting position, starting staff somewhere in the big leagues. Pretty crazy.
That's incredible. Well, that's the one thing about the WBC. You know, these guys that are kind of fringe guys that have been in the big leagues before, they go out, all of a sudden they show up in the WBC and they go, hey, man, maybe Matt Harvey still has something left in the tank. He's getting an opportunity for some starts. He's still throwing, you know, low to mid-90s fastball. Maybe he's got something left in the tank. So it'd be interesting to see. It is funny, you know, we talk about Matt Harvey playing for Italy and getting a chance to do that. Piazza coaching Italy. You know, a lot of these guys are American-born guys with Italian roots. You know, that makes me think of Freddie Freeman, you know, with the Canadians, because a lot of people are like, man, Freddie Freeman grew up in California. He should be on that U.S. team that's so dominant. You know, then they have D-Row would have a real problem. Freddie Freeman, Goldschmidt, and Alonso, who are you going to play there? But Freddie chooses every year to play with Team Canada. And the big reason why is his mom passed away when he was 10 years old, and she's from Canada and you know, had a lot of pride from where she was from, and he honored her in the WBC by playing for Team Canada. So I thought that was kind of cool. You know, Freddie Freeman, one of the best players, obviously from America, but his mom has his roots from his late mother is Canadian, and he plays for the Canadian.
That's a great story.
You know, WBC team.
Yeah, there's not one celebrity I've ever seen or watched or listened to from Canada who I don't like. There's something about Canadian people that I really like.
They're just good people. They're like hardworking, good. Even the hockey guys, dude. The hockey guys, like even Sid Crosby and those guys, like I've gotten to know a lot of those guys. They're such like down to earth, good dudes. Like really. I think it's just like Ryan Dempster? Into them when they're kids. Like be nice, be humble.
Yeah, Ryan Dempster. I just sit next to him all the time, and I'm like, God, he's such a nice person. It's freaking
dude. Matt Stairs, Larry Walker. You know,
yeah,
a lot of good guys.
Great comedians.
Otto, all these guys. A lot of good dudes.
Great comedians.
Yeah,
all good. Yeah. Anyway, well, that's our Canadian talk for the day. What else do we have? There was one other baseball thing we were thinking of. I forgot what it was. Do you remember what it was? We've had a long couple of days, folks. Both of us.
How about D-Row? I was looking at D-Row's staff. Obviously, you got Griffey there, but you know, D-Row has his two best friends on the staff too: Michael Young and Brian McCann.
Yeah,
crazy. That's cool, man. That's cool when you can look to Michael Young and Brian McCann. Hey, who would you bring in here? What are you going to do? You know, you could tell they're right next to him on the bench. So that must be a thrill for those guys to be leading that crew. And you saw Trout after the game too, saying, you know, one of the things he loves about this team is the coaching staff. So I thought that was cool too.
I also love, you know, Griffey as well, or better than anybody in the world.
Yeah.
I love that he's coaching. I wonder if this is going to like light a little fire under him to be like, huh, you know what? Because he's always been, it's hard to be the best. I got to think like Michael Jordan, his transition into the NBA post, you know, front office stuff was actually very difficult, but then he wound up being decent at it. Like, I don't know, man. Ken Griffey Jr., I wonder how good he would be at making that transition. You're smiling right now. You say there's no shot.
It just makes me think, dude, it makes me think of Barry Bonds right away.
Mm-hmm.
Bonds, what did he do? Went to the Marlins. I think Bonds is a big reason Yelich became an MVP. Because he taught Yelich how to really get on top of the ball and drive it to left center. You know, really kind of change his swing. Yelich talked about that. But Bonds did that for 1 year, and then it was like, that's it. Like, you forget, bro, 162 is a long year. And, you know, I'm not saying, you know, Bonds has made a ton of money. Griff's made a ton of money, too. I think Griff loves the schedule. He loves being around his family. He kind of loves doing what he does. I can't imagine him doing 162 games. But maybe if he did it, he'd do it for one or 2 years. His dad was one of my favorite hitting coaches and was a great hitting coach, and he did it for years. But I think Junior's pay scale was a little different than Senior's.
Yeah, definitely. You know what I mean?
So, yeah. And Junior's making a ton of money still with Nike and all that stuff. So I just don't know if he would, you know, have the passion to do 162. Yeah. But I love the other day, like, watching Pete Alonso and Trey Turner and Griff were talking hitting.
That's so crazy right?
And he had Trey Turner come back on his heels and then come back flat-footed. And the Griff was talking to him, hey, there's your balance. You just got to stay balanced through the swing. And one thing about Griff that I played with, when I played with him, he talked about two things: stay in balance and getting the bat head out. Get the bat head out and stay balanced. Like, he kept it pretty simple. He was a simple guy, kept it simple. That's why he was able to repeat his mechanics over and over and be one of the greatest players the game's ever seen. But I thought it was really cool to see him talking to Trey Turner and Pete Alonso, two of the best hitters in the game now, kind of going over, hey, you want to know what these are the things that I thought about. And there's nothing better than talking hitting with some of the legends. Like, I remember having conversations with George Brett. I was in the same group in the 2004 All-Star game with Tony Gwynn. And I remember when we would come out of the hitting, I would just ask Gwynn, hey, man, how do you hit that five hole so easy? And what are you thinking about when you get a tough lefty? And it was great because he was like, I took stuff from it. He's like, listen, against a lefty, I'm really looking middle away. I'm kind of honoring the slider. And if I get something middle in, I'll react into it. But I'm looking out over the plate, something I can shoot to left. And like, to talk to Tony Gwynn like that, dude, and have that opportunity,
I got chills.
It's priceless.
I got chills just now hearing that. It's so cool. Dude, I think that talking to you and guys like you who played, like, it's the next level thing. It's funny. Yeah. Some coaches, the guys I respect the most, like Dusty Baker actually did play and was a really good player. It is not often where the best players make the best coaches, right? Because what is that? What's that term? It's those who can't teach. Like, for me,
right?
I guarantee you and I have been in an edit room together and we were like breaking down a hitter swing. And I might say some things that might impress you, but it's because I couldn't do it. Not because I did it.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, oh, I see what he's doing there. I couldn't physically do that. So therefore, I know that he's doing that better than I did it. But when the great players are great coaches, then it's just like, I mean, that is like next the level. Perfect level of learning, right?
I totally agree with that. Some of my best coaches were bad players. Even like a Jim Leland. Leland was, and he would say he was a bad player. He made it up to Double-A, I think, as a catcher, backup catcher. You know, but he's one of the best managers in the games ever seen. You know, but some of my best hitting coaches were just okay players, or, you know what I mean?
Kevin Long has made a few million dollars being a hitting coach. Kevin Long was not a good professional baseball player. He'll tell you that first before we do.
Right, because, I mean, but you said it before. The guys that had to grind had to figure out how to do it, but they still couldn't do it. But they learned what to do over the course of the failure of the game. So failure became feedback for these coaches. And all of a sudden, they become great big league coaches who say, hey, man, I couldn't do it, but this is what you need to do because I had to learn how to do it because I couldn't do it.
I'm going to put you on a spot. That's great. I'm going to put you on a spot with something. Is there something or a couple things that a coach, when you were younger, said to you, you know, Case, maybe you should tilt your bat a little more this way, or maybe you should get your foot down a little bit more this way? Can you identify one or two things that somebody taught you, and it could have even been in college, that stuck with you and made something click with you to get as good as you were at hitting the baseball?
Great hitters wait. Frank Porco, my hitting coach since I was growing up, great hitters wait. And he pounded into my head, like, great hitters wait. Like, got to let the ball come to you. Like, you still got to get it out front, but you got to let the ball come to you. And, you know, that was one of the biggest things I learned. And then also, too, like, I was a big, like, keep your hands alive all the time. Like, if you lose your body, you can still keep your hands back and keep them alive. And that's what I mean. Like, if you step forward, don't bring your hands with you. You know, keeping that bow and arrow effect. Now, and if it's a changeup or something where you're out front, you still got a shot. Your hands are still alive. So those were two things that, you know, I loved. And also, I remember Dave Magadan, two guys. Chris Chambliss told me one thing one time that helped me a ton about coming down on the baseball, like just trying to hit the top part of the ball and backspin it. I thought that was great. Griffey Sr. would talk a lot about that too, and I thought that helped me a lot too, coming down, getting backspinning the ball. Dave Magadan was one of my favorite hitting coaches though in Boston. And I thought this was such a great thing. In spring training, he got me together and Jason Bay and Big Poppy, all the guys, and he would say, hey, Case, when you're going great, what are two things you're doing? And I'd say, you know what? I'm looking left center, I'm keeping my hands back, and I'm really relaxed. So there was like two or three things. And then he would say to Jason Bay, hey, Jay Bay, what are you doing? I remember Jay Bay saying, I get my foot down early and my hands are back. Big Poppy, what are you doing? I'm getting good rhythm with my leg kick, you know, and I'm getting good separation when I'm going well. So it was ingenious because when you get to that level, you know what you're doing, but sometimes you can't see yourself, right? Other people can see it for you. So Dave Magadan would come up to, hey, Case, just want to say you've been scuffling these past couple games. Are you looking to go the other way? Are your hands back? Are you relaxed? Oh, man, I'm really not that relaxed. Hey, Jay Bay, you've been scuffling lately. Are you getting your foot down? You told me this. Hey, Big Poppy, are you getting a good rhythm with your leg kick? Dude, I think getting guys to understand themselves and then throwing it back at them, those are what good hitting coaches do. The worst hitting coaches that I've had are guys that I go over four, get you in the batting cage, and they got 75 different drills, hinge bats, pink softballs, freaking, you know, ping pong balls, all these things. And they, hey, do this, 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 and this. No, dude, we're in the big leagues. Like, I'm here for a reason. Get my ability to come out. Quit freaking trying to reinvent the wheel and telling me what you did. And you were not even a good hitter. You know what I mean?
That was really cool. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Really cool. I remember when I was in high school, I was going into my junior year and I could always hit a baseball. I really could. I hang my hat on that. I could hit. And it was going into my junior year, and I got invited to this camp down in Florida. I'm not going to say who it was. It was a former professional baseball family, very big name family. And the family, and it's not the Ripkins, by the way. I'll make that clear. It wasn't Bill and Cal. But I go down there, and
Bucky Dent.
No, it wasn't Bucky Dent. No. You can keep guessing. I'll say it. I don't care. But I get down there. And they were teaching everybody to hit the exact same way, dude.
Yeah, run for the hills, dude.
And it was, and I'll tell you the other thing. They didn't believe in leg kicks. They wanted you to stand spread and just do like a little a pickup of your back heel. And that's, yeah. And like it did have the momentum. It was the same thing. But they said picking your leg up is worthless in baseball. And I called my dad. I'm down in Florida by myself. I called my dad. I'm like, Dad, I'm not doing this. Like, I'm not doing this.
Dude, who did they play for?
I'll tell you one thing. One guy was the MVP of a World Series in the late 70s. Only played in a World Series because the starting second baseman on a team who is arguably one of my favorite players ever.
Willie Randolph.
Correct. Was backed up by somebody who won a World Series MVP, I believe. Hold on.
Lupinella.
No. Dude, you think I'll be coming on here talking shit about Lou Piniella on our podcast? I'd be terrified. Hold on. Wait, let me just make sure it was a World Series MVP. Yep. This one guy is considered arguably one of, I hope they don't listen to this, one of the
most
unlikely World Series heroes of all time.
It just means they couldn't teach hitting.
Yeah, I just didn't like their style. Brian Doyle, the Doyle brothers.
Oh, the Doyle, that's right. The Doyle's that big baseball name.
Yes, Brian Doyle won the MVP of the World Series because Willie Randolph, I think he broke his leg that year or something like that.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, don't listen to them. I'm not going to get in trouble for this, right? It's the truth.
No. You're just saying you don't like their style, that's all.
No, I didn't. There's
probably a lot of people that did.
Would you do that? Would you go tell Jake next week, hey, stop lifting your leg when you swing?
No. What I've learned with Jake is sometimes when you overcoach, you
get in his head.
Analysis by paralysis by analysis. You just got to let people be natural and get more into the process of the at bat. The pitch, one pitch at a time, and get the process tight more than anything.
Interesting.
Get your approach tight, your systems.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I agree. And sometimes, some people go to the batting cage and they hit different in the batting cage than the other guy, but if it makes you ready for a game, then do whatever the hell you got to do.
Go compete, too. Don't forget you got a competition going on. And I say one thing, too. Never go on your feelings, dude. Go on your behaviors. What's your process? See the ball. Because in baseball, I remember having a conversation with Tino Martinez one time at first base. Or it might have been Jeter. It was one of them. And we were talking about over 162, how many games are you locked in? And we said 15.
Mm,
15 really? Games you're locked in. 147, you're grinding. Ooh. So it's like, if you go with your feelings, dude, you're going to suck. But if you go with your let your behaviors drive your feelings. The same way in life. Let your behaviors drive your feelings. Like, take action. Take a deep breath. Look middle way. Compete. Hunt the fastball. Be ready to hit. Not whether you had a good BP or you had a good bullpen session. Go out there and compete. And at the end of the day, let your behaviors drive your feelings. Never let your feelings, I don't feel good today. I'm jet lagged. I don't, this and that. That's why 95% of guys in the minor leagues never play a day in the big leagues, because they let their feelings dictate their behaviors, and it's too many wasted at bats. And next thing you know, you're a minor league player.
God, one day, man. One day you got to say yes to one of these jobs you get offered. I'm not going to say them out loud, but you got to one day, dude. It's so good. I can't imagine seeing a player, a 24-year-old kid. You're going to teach him how to be a Hall of Famer, man. Damn it.
I love it.
I have one more question for you. Yeah. I had a hitting instructor tell me this once, and I actually always stuck with this. You always say, go, put the work in. You want to be a great player? Go to the cage. Get your swings in. Get your hands beat up. Do your thing. I had a coach tell me, this guy tell me once, he goes, all right, you're done for the day. And I'm like, what do you mean? I've only been here for 20 minutes. Normally I do 45 with you, whatever. He's like, you're tired. And I'm like, so what? And he goes, baseball's mechanics. He's like, I don't want you sitting in this cage for another 15 minutes taking another 100 swings when you're going to be dropping your shoulder because you're being tired or because of this, and you're going to get yourself into bad habits. What do you say about that? Because I don't know if it was true.
I kind of agree with that. I kind of agree with that because I think you do start to go into the bad habits, and I think it takes a lot to get tired. So if you're tired, you've taken a ton of swings. And it might not be exactly what you want, so mentally you go, I need 100, 200 more. No, you don't. You need to get the hell out of there and go home. But every session you take when you hit is a win because you learn something from it. So even if you don't have a good session, you walk out of there and go, okay, I got some reps in. I took something from this session. That's why when you have a bad session, I can't tell you how many times I would drive home from a bad session and go, be a little pissed off. But then as I got older, I started to say, okay, way to show up and put the swings in and get some sort of feedback from today. And sometimes they were longer, sometimes they were shorter. But at the end of the day, I kind of agree with that. If you're getting tired, just be done. Because obviously, if you're tired, you've taken a ton of swings, we'll see you tomorrow and be ready to go.
Yeah, and it's not I like that. And it's not like you're being lazy. You've worked so hard that you've exhausted yourself. So it's not like you're just going through the motions. Right. It's you're spent.
Yeah, sometimes you got to work smarter, not harder.
Nice, dude. This was a good one. We got to start talking more hitting like this.
Yeah, it's great, dude.
Love you. Are a career 302 hitter. You did.
Let's go.
All right, man.
All right, Chidgey.
Heading into tomorrow. Let's do it.
Yeah, I'll see them all, brother. Love you. And everyone out there, thanks for listening to us. We're very grateful. And subscribe, download. We got to say that every time. Hit that plus button. Let's go. All right, man. See you tomorrow, brother. See everybody tomorrow.
See you.